I fully agree with you. I think it's a big market opportunity, but for sure a complex one. And because of this, also probably a more longer term option for operators.
I am Reese Tisdale, and this is Future Water, which we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. This is episode 69, and I think it's going to be a good one. I'm talking to Bluefield's Chloe Meyer about the European Union's European Chemical Agency recent launch of a six-month evaluation to review a proposal restricting the use of all things PFAS. It is now a global topic du jour. So this initiative signals the next step towards what looks like tighter regulations and regulatory enforcement of PFAS contaminants of emerging concern on the continent. So look forward to the conversation with Chloe. We'll bring her in a minute. Before we do that, though, I wanted to throw out a couple things. My colleagues and I, Keith Hayes in particular, are going to be at Oswater in Sydney next month. This May 10th to 12th. We're going to be there a couple days before. So we'd love to meet up with you before and during the event. So let us know at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com if you're going to be at Oswater. It looks to be a good event. It's always nice to be in Sydney, so look forward to seeing you there. Secondly, if you are interested in metering, that is the cash register of the water utility, we've talked a little bit about it on this podcast, but Bluefield has recently released a global metering report. It is called The Global Water Metering Landscape, Technology Shifts, Competitive Strategies, and Market Outlook. Market outlook means forecast, I think, across 45 countries, looking at things like smart meters, mechanical meters by country and region. If you're interested in that, plus competitive analysis and key trends shaping the deployment of what we call the utility cash register, let us know. All you have to do is visit bluefieldresearch.com for more information. In less than 2 minutes, a full report plus a handful of data will be in your hands or on your laptop or on your iPad, whatever your medium of choice is. So with that being said, let's bring Chloe into the conversation. Let's talk a little bit about PFAS and what's happening outside of the U.S. All right, here I am with Chloe Meyer. And we're going to talk a little bit about PFAS. So, Chloe, how are things?
Hi, Reese. I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for having me on the podcast today.
Yeah, you don't even get the advantage that I have. It's a long weekend here in Massachusetts. For those not in the know, it's Patriots Day weekend. So it's a full-fledged sporting holiday in Boston. Just, Chloe, I don't even know if you know this, but basically on Monday we get the Red Sox start playing. They have a game in the morning, which is earlier than usual. The Bruins are playing, and I think even the Celtics are playing, and the Boston Marathon all in one day on Monday. So it's really about the Boston Marathon. So we get a long weekend while you in France, you get a lot of holidays on your own. So
yeah, May is a fair, we do a fair, get a fair share of holidays in May in France for sure. Not this weekend, but in later in May for sure.
But, you know, unfortunately, you might have to work until you're 65 until you get Social Security.
Unfortunately, indeed.
Exactly. So, all right, well, let's jump into it. So I'm hoping you can give us a little bit of perspective on what's happening with PFAS in Europe. Obviously, it is sort of a big topic in the U.S., particularly in recent years, a lot of money going towards it. So there's been some activity in Europe in particular. So give us a little bit of background about what's happening and how it relates to some research you recently put out.
Sure. So in the EU, actually, we've also been looking at PFAS for a few years now. In 2021, for instance, the Drinking Water Directive, which is the EU main law on the topic, was revised and set the very first ever limits on PFAS in drinking water. Last year, in 2022, ECHA, the European Chemical Agency, also started investigating the potential ban of PFAS from firefighting foams, which are definitely a large source of contamination in the US, but also in Europe for sure. So kind of fast forward to 2023, New things happened earlier this year. So at the end of March, ICHA again opened a consultation process to review a wide range proposal to regulate PFAS in the EU. The proposal was submitted by five countries. So we have Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, Norway, and Sweden also. And I think it's interesting to note that those were the countries who submitted the proposal because they are countries that are known for facing pollution from PFAS and also countries that have already taken actions to limit the PFAS use in certain applications. And I think that this sort of proactive national stance that these countries have is sort of reflected into the text, the proposal that they submitted, which really is the tightest EU-wide proposal to date regarding PFAS. So the text is sort of laid out around two restriction options. The first one, the more stringent one, is a full ban of PFAS following a transition period of a year and a half after adoption. There's also a second option that is proposed, which is also full ban, but with use-specific exemptions for 5 to 12 years for different specific industries. So obviously, the text is still a proposal. It has to go through several rounds of review before being discussed by the EU rulemakers and being potentially adopted. I mean, we know that regulatory things do take quite a long time in the EU in such a large regional body. But I think it's an interesting proposal because it would apply to both the production and use of PFAS in products, but that includes the products that are imported into the EU. So we're really looking at a text that could have implications beyond the EU region, the EU borders here. And I think more generally, it's also representative of growing public concerns in the region regarding PFAS. Actually, the consultation opened almost at the same time as the publication of a detailed study and data set looking at PFAS pollution by a consortium of European journalists called the Forever Pollution Project. And that investigation identified over 17,000 contaminated sites, but also pinpointed nearly 21,000 locations with presumed PFAS contamination. So definitely another development that could contribute to fuel the regulatory efforts around PFAS in the region.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the sort of momentum towards regulating it is sort of taking shape. Similarly, what we're seeing in the U.S., you know, what ends up happening is you identify a couple sites, you know, that goes from one, two, three, and hundreds, thousands. And like you said, if there are 17,000 contaminated sites, it's so ubiquitous. Quite honestly, I'm sure there are a lot more than that that haven't been identified, obviously.
Probably, yeah.
But then it's in the media. And like you mentioned, this organization, the Forever Pollution Project, they're identifying sites. They're committed to this. So it's in the news every day and it just elevates public concerns. And sooner or later, it takes hold at the regulatory level, which it seems to be what's happening. Well, when it comes to the EU, like you said, it's a slow process. We're dealing a lot of countries, a lot of stakeholders across the board. And I think what else is interesting, it's not only looking at sort of the contamination or the sites themselves, but also the production at the same time. Well, one question I would have is, you know, when you talk about things like importing goods and things like that, can we say this is unprecedented, or have we seen something like this before in the EU or something to compare it to?
So that's a good question. I mean, obviously there are large sets of regulations regarding the importation of products into the EU. However, it's slightly different when we speak about potential pollution sources in foreign countries where the products are being made, right? So I would say it's definitely not common at that scale, but at the same time, it's not the first time that the EU is going into that direction. Actually, less than 6 months ago, back in December of last year, the European Council, together with the European Parliament, agreed on the implementation of the new carbon border adjustment mechanism, which is going to restrict the importation of carbon-intensive products like cement, iron, steel, fertilizers, and even electricity and hydrogen. So the PFAS proposal is not all that different in terms of the regulatory approach it adopts. And it's really going into the same direction in terms of pollution, whether from carbon emission or in that case, PFAS emission and contamination, right?
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I think the what is it, the CBAM is, I think, what people refer to it as, the carbon border adjustment mechanism. That's really interesting. And while you're saying that, I was also thinking about the headache that, I don't know if you face this, because I don't even know if you use Apple products, but now Apple is having to switch to the USB-C,
right?
I think because of the EU, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, it's a total nightmare in my household, because there are chargers and wires of all different shapes and sizes in my house, because we all have even Apple devices, but they all have different types of plugs. So that's a headache in and of itself. So maybe another good comparison. Well, what about, you know, when we look at this, you mentioned those, what was it, five countries that are being more proactive in getting out there. What about as far as the market opportunity goes? Because that's always the big question. It's like, here's this problem. Well, all right, well, where, what, when, and how is this going to, you know, take place? We help companies in the water sector figure out what the opportunities are, addressable markets. Any thoughts on that, or what's your perspective on what the opportunity might be?
Right. So I think the opportunity is going to be segmented around two verticals, really. On the one hand, we are going to see lots of things happening in the drinking water treatment side. And on the other hand, we also have, I think, to consider the biosolids remediation segment or vertical. I think if we start with the drinking water side, which is probably the main short-term driver and the bigger, biggest short-term opportunity as well. I think I mentioned earlier that the EU drinking water directive was revised in 2021 to include PFAS limits for the first time. And that text, sorry for the audience, lots of EU regulations being mentioned here, but that text is going to enter into force in January 2026. So that's the date by which the countries are to be compliant with the maximum PFAS limits in drinking water. So I would say we do have that regulatory push here, and the core market opportunity, I think, would be primarily made of six countries. So I'm thinking Germany, Italy, Sweden, Denmark, Belgium, and probably the Netherlands. So why these countries specifically? I think because they are already showing, again, known extensive contamination from PFAS due to their industrial and commercial activities. But again, they are also countries who have started taking measures to rein in the PFAS contamination. So they are pretty advanced on the sort of initiative curve in terms of drinking water remediation compared to other countries in Europe. And I think in terms of technology, we're really talking here about activated carbon, ion exchange, and reverse osmosis, which both have demonstrated efficiency, obviously, in removing PFAS from water, but also their commercial viability. There are always, I think, some research and development projects, pilot projects going on, looking at all the potential treatment technology. But I think in the short and probably midterm, those three are still going to represent the main market opportunity for PFAS treatment in drinking water.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And on the technology side, you know, I think, and I think this is what you're saying, is that, you know, when it comes to available technologies, you know, water utilities for drinking water treatment, they do know activated carbon, they know reverse osmosis. So it's nothing unique, nothing foreign to them, or sort of newfangled technology that's unproven. I think there are some other issues on the backside, which will be interesting to see how it unfolds for companies, let's say like Cabot or Calgon Carbon, other sort of global vendors for activated carbon. Is what do you deal with the activated carbon? Can it be reused? Can it be treated, or does it have to be incinerated? Or does it also have to go to a landfill, which will lead to my next question about biosolids? But what do you do with the waste, right? And so obviously biosolids are the byproduct from wastewater treatment. So tipping fees, I think, as a whole are already rising globally, whether it be in the US or in Europe as well. That's driven by a number of things, capacity at landfills, but also just energy prices, transportation, things like that are driving those prices up to dispose of this. So let's talk about maybe the more complicated issue, I think. Agree or disagree, but what about biosolids?
Right. So I fully agree with you. I think it's a big market opportunity, but for sure a complex one. And because of this, also probably a more of a longer term option for operators. So the PFAS removal in biosolids is done primarily by pyrolysis. It's still in Europe a fairly underdeveloped market. There's again lots of R&D projects, lots of pilots being done, particularly I'm thinking in countries like Denmark and Sweden, for instance. But the thing is that in Europe, the biosolids are still widely handled via composting or agricultural use. And obviously those are sources of further spreading of untreated PFAS. Just a few countries have established threshold values for PFAS in sludge used for fertilization. I think Denmark did it, Germany, Austria, Sweden, and Norway as well. So, I mean, you can see also here that those are countries we've already spoken or mentioned a few times. So those really are at the forefront of the PFAS remediation, even in for mid-term commercial opportunities or market opportunities like biosolids. But I would say if we are speaking more in near term, the opportunity in Europe is with countries who really already incinerate a large share of their biosolids, because it means they already have the value chain and infrastructure laid out to potentially go a bit further and do pyrolysis. So that would be Belgium, Germany, the Netherlands. And if we look outside the EU, but still in Europe, that would also include Switzerland.
I'll throw this out there. Do you get a sense that the EU is looking at the US to figure out what's happening? I mean, it's you know, obviously different problems, definitely different approach to regulations as a whole. I mean, are there examples, or do you think there are experiences that the EU is looking at the US, or do you think the EU has said, feel like they have a handle on it and therefore they're going forward on their own?
That's a good question. So in terms of biosolid PFAS remediation in biosolid, I think the EU is looking a lot at research projects that are carried out in the US to sometimes replicate those and do pilot testing in Europe per se. I think in terms of drinking water remediation, I wouldn't say the EU is following the steps of the US per se. I mean, some countries are more advanced again in terms of PFAS remediation and drinking water. And I think they are lobbying to the EU to go move forward quicker at the regional level. So I would say more than looking at what other regions are doing. I think the EU is looking at what the forward-thinking countries within its own region are doing.
Yeah, and I would certainly think that certain companies, right, the global companies that have footprints in both. So a good example would be Veolia or, you know, Xylem or Evoqua, now seemingly coming together. Companies like that are going to start looking more globally than beyond their specific, I guess, headquarter countries. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. So, well, you just did put out some research on this. So if anybody's interested, obviously they can reach out to us and we can share some additional insights. But if we missed anything when it comes to PFAS in Europe or even globally and what's happening that may have some broader impacts.
Right. So, well, obviously the topic of PFAS is a very big one and something that we'll definitely continue to speak about in the coming months and years for sure. And I think, obviously, we spoke a lot about Europe today, but we are for sure monitoring also what is happening beyond that region, right? We have been watching closely the US market and the latest, for instance, US EPA's proposal to implement fairly low limits of PFAS in drinking water. But we're also looking at other geographies, for instance, Australia and New Zealand, are definitely two interesting markets when it comes to PFAS. Actually, the two countries' environmental protection agencies are working together on a third national environmental management plan, the NEMP, specifically on PFAS. The consultation process closed a few weeks ago, just at the end of the month of February, on the draft proposal for that third NEMP plan. And obviously there will be further discussions by legislators, but the new law should come into application in 2024, so just next year, with new regulations and guidelines specifically on biosolids. And I think Europe is more focused at the moment on drinking water. This is where the short-term opportunity is. But conversely, in Australia and New Zealand, the focus is much more on biosolids and soil remediation in general. So definitely a market that we will continue to monitor and watch.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's moving faster than I thought it would, right? And maybe that's my perspective in the U.S. There's tens of billions of dollars going towards it, but the problem is so pervasive. We're trying to figure out how big it is. And obviously, we have a lot of clients and other companies sort of in our network that are asking us about, you know, where the opportunities, both on the drinking water side, which, like, it seems to you would agree that it's sort of more manageable per se, not necessarily on the economics because someone's got to pay for all of this, but at least on the technology side, on the biosolid side, it'll be interesting. And so, it, you know, to see what's happening in places like Australia and New Zealand, you know, if they're incubators for advanced technologies and in more regulated environments. I mean, Europe is obviously one, the focus of this research, but also to some extent in the US because of the federal system that which we live in, it's really state driven to this point. But even the EPA has put out its MCLs for drinking water. There's nothing on biosolids in then Australia. So look forward to seeing how it unfolds. Well, if there's nothing else, I appreciate your time. One of you, anything you're working on right now that others might be interested in? What's on your agenda these days?
On our agenda, I think the big report that is coming and interesting research is around wastewater reuse in Europe. And it's not just about giving a portraying wastewater reuse in Europe, but also looking in more detail at the business models of reuse projects. So I think it's going to be a super interesting one. And you mentioned you'll be at Oswater in May, and we'll also be at Swan in Glasgow in the UK. So happy to meet members of our audience there if they are attending.
Oh yeah, Swan is in May as well, right? It's sort of towards the end of May.
Yeah.
Nice. Glasgow in May. That'll be exciting. So, all right. Well, Chloe, thanks a million. Thanks for the time, the insights, and given that it is a Friday, enjoy the weekend. It's hopefully be a good one.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
All right, that was fantastic. So good to get a global perspective on what's happening, not only in PFAS, but also just water in general. Chloe's a great resource and always adds a lot of value to the conversation, both on the podcast, but also internally. So if you're interested to learning more about this topic, you can also reach out to us and also reach out to Chloe. I'm sure you can find Chloe Meyer on LinkedIn, as well as at waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com. Before you sign off, I'm going to change it up a little bit. As Chloe mentioned, I'm going to be in Oswater in a couple of weeks. So that'll be, I think, the 8th to the 12th of May in Sydney. And I'll be in and out of Brisbane, it looks like, as well. So if you're interested in meeting up, let us know. We can easily set up a meeting. We'd love to talk to you. Secondly, please subscribe to the Future of Water podcast and give us a review if you're on the Apple platform, but just subscribing is an indicator that you might be interested in what we're talking about. So please do send us a note to waterexperts@bluefieldresearch.com with any topic ideas you would like us to discuss. We're doing this for you, as I always say. And lastly, tell a friend about it. It's always good to reach out. It's, you know, springtime. So time for reaching out to friends coming out of the cave. This podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research. To learn more about us, visit us at bluefieldresearch.com. Till we talk again, be well, be safe, and take care.